Wessex Press, an imprint of Gazagine Books, is a premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. They are also our publishers for The One Fixed Point in a Changing Age, A New Generation on Sherlock Holmes. It was edited by several of the Baker Street Babes and contains a foreword by Laurie R. King, the author of the Mary Russell series. Another brilliant book published with Gazagine Books is Matthias Boström and Matt Laffey's Sherlock Holmes and Conan Doyle in the Newspapers. If you'd like to know more about Wessex Press, Gazagine Books, or our publication, please go to www.wessexpress.com.
The Baker Street Journal is a leading Sherlockian publication written by the readers for the readers. It contains both academic articles and light, fun reading for any sort of Sherlock Holmes enthusiast. If you are a fan of The Great Detective and the other works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and you'd like to read new and exciting writings by Sherlockians, or even find information on how to get published in the journal, please visit their website, www.bakerstreetjournal.com.
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. This quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two to one be mine? They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Scotland Yard, they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this
whole Welcome to the Baker Street Babes podcast number 67. This is Ashley, I'm here with Lindsay, and today we are joined by the magnificent duo of Anna Waterhouse and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who are together responsible for the wonderful new pastiche, Mycroft Holmes, which is out on the 22nd of September.
Hi, this is Anna.
Hello. Anna.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Here we
Kareem
go.
Abdul-Jabbar, how are you?
I'm fine.
Hi, Kareem. Anna's on, too, so we're all good to go.
Okay, good.
Well, I would like to thank you both for joining us, because it's awesome and completely cool. This is the, I think, 67th episode of the Baker Street Babes podcast. And
wow, congratulations. That's great.
Thank you.
As I was telling them, Kareem, before you came aboard, their review was, I think, we've gotten some good reviews, thank God, but your review was just so spot on. You just caught everything we were trying to accomplish, and that meant a lot to us because it was also one of the first, and so we were both pretty darn thrilled with it. So,
oh, thank great. You so much. We just really wanted to do it justice because it's great work.
Yeah, thank it makes a buddy. Difference to have readers who are also Holmes fans.
Well, I'm glad we tried to tailor it to people who have appreciated what Mr. Doyle did. So that means a lot to us to hear you say that.
I think it very much hit that mark.
Well, you have just knocked it out of the park. And what we would like to do is, could we ask both of you our four questions to make you honorary Baker Street Babes?
Oh, gosh, yes. But I might not be able to answer. Can I get on Google?
Well, no. All of them are perfectly simple questions. They just are about preferences. So first of all, how were you introduced to Sherlock Holmes, both of you?
Okay, for me, the very first was when I was a boy. I grew up in New York, and on Saturdays they would have Sherlock Holmes Theater, the Basil Rathbone series.
Yeah.
So Basil Rathbone as Sherlock and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. And I didn't read Arthur Conan Doyle until my rookie year in the NBA. Somebody gave me a compilation of all of the stories and the novels, all in one, two volumes. And
oh, so you had like a big old book.
I had two big old books. And I grabbed the first one, took it with me on the road, and I got hooked at that point. And it led me to other crime fiction. From that, I started reading Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, and, you know, I just started to get into it.
Mm. Wonderful.
My answer is going to be a lot shorter. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Because other than Sherlock Holmes on television, from Benedict Cumberbatch to Basil Rathbone, I really hadn't read any Sherlock. But we started.
But you and Mr. Abdul-Jabbar have been co-writers for a while, right?
We've been co-writers only in a documentary that, again, thankfully won some awards. So it bonded us in that sense, and it made us know that we were both perfectionists. And we weren't going to stop until we were both satisfied with something. But thankfully, we started this conversation about 2 years ago, where Kareem's love for all things Sherlock really came to the fore. And so I started Leslie Klinger, who's a dear friend
who's
of Kareem's.
Who's a lovely man.
A champion of Sherlock Holmes. We, through him, got a couple of the annotated Sherlock Holmes. And I just started reading, and it was fascinating and wonderful. So I've had a little heads up, but my actual introduction was Kareem.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's the coolest answer possible. So who is your favorite character from the Sherlock Holmes mysteries? And you have to answer this, but you can answer it sarcastically or you know, in any way you want.
Kareem?
I enjoy the way that Sherlock messes with Inspector Lestrade.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah, you know, he just uses him and just has him make a fool of himself repeatedly. I enjoy that, you know. And I think, you know, Sherlock has fun with that. It's sort of like somebody tearing the wings off of a fly. You know?
I completely agree with you on this entire, like, yes, but you wrote an entire novel about Mycroft, so.
Oh, that's good.
He must also be a little bit tender to you, but yes, Lestrade. I love him.
Oh, yeah.
Mine is probably Mrs. Hudson.
Ah.
I keep wondering, what was she thinking? So she becomes a curiosity to me because I can't imagine having this man as a tenant. And yeah, so she becomes endearing and completely batty, and which is why Kareem and I created a nephew for her in Mycroft.
That was so cool.
Yeah, I like that. So essentially we all agree that Sherlock is basically horrible to everyone, including the people he's supposed to care very much about.
Yes.
Okay, so now, completely different question. Not who is your favorite character, but who would you most like to have tea with and talk about the Sherlock Holmes characters with that person?
That, yeah, because that makes you have to go back. Probably one of the people that he manages to help. You know, like the... Geez, I forget the person's name that comes to him in the Hounds of the Baskervilles. And he said, you know, we have this horrible thing happening, you know.
Dr. Mortimer.
I haven't read it recently, so I forget his name. But, yeah, people like that. People at Holmes really helped them and made it possible for them to get past something that was, you know, pretty horrible in their life. And he solved the issue for them.
You know, we've been doing this for a lot of years, and I don't think anyone has ever given us that answer before. That is the kind of answer that only comes from somebody who has social activism in their heart. You know, that's fascinating.
And we've been talking about that a lot, in the sense that we're like, oh yeah, we are very into social activism, and not everyone does that.
Yeah, there was part of the reason that I mean, the social activism, I think, also colors Mycroft Holmes. And we want to get even more into that if we get the chance to write sequels. But that's certainly a big deal, I think, for both of us.
Do you want to talk about Trinidad a little bit? Because I think
Douglas, the fact that he has to live a certain way. We're talking about those issues, that you just alluded to.
Well, we had actually a conversation between ourselves where we were like, is it rude to ask them about how socially active this book was? Because, as a woman who has also written a Sherlock Holmes novel, I was not always treated like a person, and it sucked. And I didn't want to, necessarily just decide that had also happened to either of you, but I imagined it might have.
Oh yeah, and the character Georgiana, she's got issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With her role in life, because she is a woman, and understanding that it is circumscribed by that, and not liking it,
Yeah.
I thought it was entirely appropriate because those ideas and thoughts were coming to the forefront. Women's suffrage soon became a big issue in Great Britain.
If you're talking, though, about some kind of problem that we had with the actual novel,
I mostly meant commentary from people who are idiots.
Oh, we've been protected.
I didn't necessarily mean problems that you've had with the novel. I meant people are really dumb.
I think Kareem gets a lot of flack for the Time Magazine articles. He has a lot of supporters and obviously almost a million followers, I think, on Twitter or something. But but when it comes to the actual to some actual comments, oh my gosh, yeah, it's pretty stunning.
I was very conflicted about even bringing it up, but I was it happened to me, so I guess.
Yeah, of course. And anytime you have any kind of political activism, and Kareem and I are both old enough to remember the 70s, that comes with the territory. People don't want to change. change is difficult, and it's painful, and it's not comfortable, and why should they? So, so that does come with the territory, but specifically in Mycroft Holmes, we wanted so much to make sure that the novel was entertaining, while at the same time we did touch on some social issues. What it was like to be black in 1870, what it was like to be a woman, what it was like to be Mycroft Holmes, who's a good-looking 23-year-old Brit who...
And just kind of a weirdo.
kind of a weirdo. But to see how he starts to understand that it's a big world out there. And Trinidad, of course, which you brought up, that's really close to Kareem's heart. That's where his family's from. So,
Kareem, would you like to talk a little bit about your family history?
Oh, yes. My grandfather emigrated to the United States in 1917. But he did that after having had a career as a constable in the British Colonial Police in the West Indies.
Wow.
My grandfather was in Trinidad. He was born in Trinidad, joined the Constabulary there, and then ended up in Belize. And he realized that there was no real opportunity in that part of the world, and decided to take my grandmother, and he went from Belize to New York by way of a steamship. He entered the country in Mobile, Alabama, and kept going, got on the train, and ended up in Brooklyn. And that's how my family got to New York.
That's wonderful. You cover a lot of bases in the course of the book. It feels first like an adventure, but it does talk about a lot of issues without kind of beating anybody over the head with them. There are some wonderful details about Douglas needing to have a mask for his store ownership, about how he has to go about his life in order to survive. And then you have the world in London and you have the world in Trinidad, and you manage to cover a lot of material, I think. And there's a lot to learn from this book, which I think is wonderful. Not always the case when you're just going for entertainment. You walk out at the other end with a lot of lessons. So very impressive.
I could not agree more. And it didn't ever sound like you were preaching to anybody.
The whole idea was to convey that realistically and just get everybody to take a look at things. And for me, my perspective, having followed the civil rights movement in the U.S., but Great Britain eliminated slavery some 30 years earlier than they
did.
It
was the 1820s.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, 1827.
1827, yeah.
Yeah, approximately. Mm-hmm. And just how race relations are so different here than they were in Great Britain. And we modeled our slave society on Great Britain's, but they, when it was over, they evolved a lot differently. And just
well, yeah, they did a bunch of things very quickly that we didn't do.
Right.
That were, a good idea, and we didn't do it. So what parts of that did you try to include in the book that were important to you?
We just tried to reflect it into the story realistically, how it would have affected mm-hmm. our characters. And we didn't want to dwell on it, but by mentioning it, it exposes the Victorian world and the world of the late 19th century.
We wanted to be sure that just because something was had been legal or illegal in the case of slavery, that it was still a social issue. So, it's just like what's happening today. You can pass the law, but that doesn't mean the people's hearts are going to go with it. And in that transition period, there's a lot of violence and a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of ugliness. And that's what was happening right then, especially for black people in Britain. They were allowed to have, to own a business, but it would have been a very foolish thing to do, especially if it was prominent and making money.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest with you, it's much more important at this point to talk about ways in which we self-congratulate ourselves erratically and we're not correct. You know, like, we're not always correct about saying, well, the North was great. No, it wasn't.
Right, exactly.
It wasn't
still there.
It wasn't great. It wasn't great.
Yeah. So can I ask what made you feel that Sherlock Holmes stories and Mycroft was a kind of good avenue for telling that story, because it's as much Douglas's story as Mycroft's story, and yet the book is called Mycroft Holmes. So was that an attempt to kind of be able to kind of have teaching moments perhaps wrapped up in a package that people would recognize more?
I think we were looking for a means to, like, expand Mycroft's world so that we could explain who he is by talking about the people around him and why, they were together and, how that affected his life and how their lives were affected by him, and especially Sherlock, who everybody feels that they know Sherlock in the world. He's still getting mail.
Right.
I would love for both of you to talk about that too, though, because, like, yeah, Sherlock Holmes is still getting mail. So, like, how important is Sherlock Holmes in your lives, and how did that come about?
I think just the fact that people know who he is, no matter what their cultural background, where they're from, the stories have been translated into every language imaginable, and he's still getting mail. So he's still captivating the imaginations of people who think that police work if you do have a certain type of genius, you can be really perfect at police work.
I think Kareem is also in love with Dr. Bell.
Oh, Joseph Bell. Yeah.
I love the wrapping up with him as a real character into the story as a friend of their father. That was totally
because Kareem loves that character. And it's interesting to me, because as a complete non-athlete, that athletes a lot of times have to do exactly that. They have to scrutinize other people's physicality to see what their weaknesses are. And it's something that Mycroft does. It's certainly something that Sherlock has done in his stories. And it's interesting to me that athletes just do that naturally. You exploit your opponent's weakness. Is that right, Kareem, or am I just talking out of my hat here?
No, that's exactly, you look for weaknesses that can be exploited, or just habits that you can take advantage of at crucial times.
Yeah.
One of my sons is an orthopedic surgeon.
Well, congrats. That's badass.
I have a doctor in the family, so I know what that whole...
My little brother is better educated than I am, and I also brag about that. Where does he work?
He's doing his residence right now at LSU Hospital in New Orleans. Since Katrina, the state built a huge, really state-of-the-art hospital, and they have a good, really good orthopedic department. So it was a good opportunity for him.
Did you consult him at all about any kind of doctoring that goes on in the book?
I've asked him like little stuff about how they learn how to do what they do, and he explained to me that it's like they start studying everything and they just get you to focus more narrowly and narrowly until you figure out what it is you want to specialize in.
We also wanted to lay the seeds of, eventually Mycroft Holmes is in his 40s, wildly obese and sedentary. And we needed to also lay the physical seeds of that in Mycroft Holmes. Mm. Hopefully we'll have 20 years to figure it out.
Yeah, but that absolutely was, it was planted and is a very important question. What happened to this person? Why is this person so uncomfortable about their own physicality, and why can't they, kind of like manage it in a way that they're comfortable with, because it seems like he's not particularly comfortable with it.
You know how he ends up where he only goes to three places on the earth that he goes, his apartment, his office, and the Diogenes Club, and that's it for where he is physically.
Yeah. When he loses it and he actually goes somewhere else, he goes to Sherlock Holmes's 221B Baker Street because, he loves his brother.
Right.
And so do you want to comment on that? That's a very interesting part of the story.
Well, we just wanted to imagine, how he got from point A to point B, when he's starting into middle age and has, all these limitations in terms of where he can go. So what we're setting up is an explanation for how that all evolved and took place.
Mycroft is actually in the stories, the Conan Doyle stories, so little that I think most readers sort of take for granted that he has always been the way he is, that he was an obese sedentary child and an obese sedentary teenager, and he's become an obese sedentary adult. And the idea of going back and having him have been somebody who was more athletic and capable, and events have conspired to make him the way that he is very interesting. And perhaps the best compliment I can ever give any pastiche author is that your book has made me go back and read the original stories with a different character in mind, because I don't think I'll ever read Mycroft quite the same as I did before. for what it's worth, it's a wonderful concept of kind of going back and giving an origin story for a character that we kind of take for granted, really.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
I think that's part of just a question of, you know, you're paying so much attention to the character. And you wouldn't necessarily, I think that both of you are so meticulous that I don't think either of you would say, yeah, I would definitely like to write this book. I'm just going to fudge it.
Wing it. We're just going to wing it. We're going to wing 1870. You know, what the heck.
Yeah. And I don't think that's something that either of you would do.
No, no, it took a lot of research. But, you know, it really is. We really, once we had the concept of young Marlon Brando versus old Marlon Brando, in a sense, we had, that's when we had Mycroft Holmes. Because we thought, no, it's almost unimaginable that somebody in 20 years can make that big a physical transition and be that different, but yet there it is. And so how did the guy in Streetcar Named Desire turn into that guy that could barely walk by the end of his life?
I think of On the Waterfront. You know, he went from dying on the waterfront to Don Corleone.
How does that happen? And so after we had that physical image in our minds, we started thinking, well, not only is he a sedentary, not only is he physically unfit, but he's also deeply, deeply troubled. Because otherwise, why would he form the Diogenes Club of all things?
We don't talk to each other. We just sit there.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, if it's Diogenes, then he's looking for an honest man. He's in search of an honest man. Then why is he in search of an honest man? So all of those things started building up for us, and we wanted to investigate, and hopefully we will have the chance to keep investigating, because he's really not a detective. He is going to be a diplomat at the pinnacle of British government and rule. And he's going to be trying to circumvent crimes, international crimes, before they happen. So he's in a whole different
because he is the British government.
Yes, exactly. He's in a whole different field than Sherlock. He is not Sherlock. He's not, you know, detective number two.
Sherlock is the little brother who can't do it quite the same way.
That's how we see it.
Well, he can't make it. That's the kind of Sherlock.
I don't mean he can't do it quite the right way. I mean he can't do it quite the same way.
Exactly.
So you've teased us a couple times with potential further books. Do you have those immediately in mind, or are they sort of phantoms on the horizon?
No, they're on a daily basis taking more and more substantive form. You know, because we've heard from our publisher and some other people even that are demanding a sequel, and
I'm just laughing because I'm so happy.
And Kareem has this brilliant idea for the next one, which we can't divulge right now, but it's just
Don't divulge it.
Not going to, but it's so good, and we would be so thrilled to get in the middle of it. And of course, I'm terrified, because every single time starting out, you're just terrified, because it's just so much work, but it's also great fun.
It is a lot of work.
We're really looking forward to it. Yeah. Yeah, writing. Man, who wants to be a writer? What a life, you know?
Writing is easy. Writing well is hard.
Rewriting is hard, yeah.
Rewriting is hard. I'm curious about your process and perhaps work together or don't work together.
In what way do you do the thing by yourself and then not do the thing by yourself and then, you know, just do it together?
Well, we come up with an idea for the story that we both think is solid, and I will do what I will do and give it to Anna to edit, or vice versa. Anna will do what she will do and give it to me to edit, and then we figure out our next step.
Do you trade back and forth a little bit?
We trade back and forth, yeah, and because we're both introverts, and so we don't sit in a room with cigars. You know, we don't sit in the same room with cigars, you know, kind of hashing it out. We both kind of like to do what we do and then push it on to each other.
They're like, fix the thing. Never mind.
Yeah. But it's also Kareem who, you know, this is Kareem's idea. I never would have gone from Mycroft Holmes, Trinidad, putting them in a boat for, you know, 10 days. It began, if you notice, and this is kind of serendipitous, it began and ends with an athletic event.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those things are things that I would naturally gravitate to. And the next story is same thing. You know, Kareem really came up with an idea. I added a few things to it, but basically it's the story he wants to tell. And then we work on it and pass it back and forth, and both of us will not let go of a chapter until we're both satisfied that we can keep going.
This might be a personal question, and I apologize if it's too personal, but how did you encounter each other and discover that you would work well together?
Well, we worked on a documentary called On the Shoulders of Giants, which is about the Harlem Renaissance and the early days of professional basketball.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated Anna's skill and, you know, knowledge as a writer and someone who takes the time to get it right. And it was really a pleasure working with her on that. And we decided we would try Mycroft.
And Kareem has a business and a producing partner, and she is the one who hired me on that. So I met Kareem through his business and producing partner. So that's how that started.
Out of curiosity, is there, since you guys have gone back and forth and the book is kind of interweaving of both of your work, do you each have like a favorite thing that you contributed, like that one part of the book or the one character or the one moment that you're just so tickled with that just
like who added that comma or something?
Well, like a character or a moment where you just were thrilled when you wrote it and when you gave it over and the other person like let it go in, that you were just happy that it was.
I think even on those great characters we collaborated, the prime example I'm thinking of is Three-Fingered Eddie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Three-Fingered Eddie was a really good character that just, and who knows who did what at this point, but, you know, that was Kareem's name for him because of somebody, I believe, and I can't even remember, you know, one of the benefits of being older is you can't remember a thing.
So much fun.
But when I went to Trinidad the very first time in 1969, there was a guy, I saw a guy playing soccer. And he only had one arm. And his name was One Arm Teddy.
Oh.
He was a Rastafarian, and he also dealt weed. You know, so everybody knew who he was.
And from that,
he modified.
Beginning, yeah. A lot of the ways it works. I can't tell you, for example, which one of us came up with Cyrus Douglas, because I truly don't know. Sometimes the characters kind of spontaneously come out. It's not like I said or he said, you know what we really need is a black character who's 40 years old. We didn't do that. I don't know. You know, sometimes some of the parts of writing are almost magic in their way. And the characters sort of appear fully formed. And that was the way it was with Douglas, I think. We knew immediately who he was, and we both agreed that he had to be the ethical, he had to be the ethics in the heart of the story.
The moral compass.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because Mycroft was going to go more and more and more in the direction of, you know, having to compromise in order to get what he wanted. And Cyrus Douglas is not a compromiser at all, to a fault. So we thought that laid a real good groundwork.
Oh, no, he's hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the end of the novel, of course, Mycroft realizes he's had to compromise several times with some pretty bad people. So that's the kind of thing where we can't even say, plus, you know, you're asking about 2.5 years ago when we actually came up with it. It might as well be, you know, what did you do when you were four, you know?
God, I know. I can't remember what happened yesterday. So,
yeah. So he arrives fully formed and demanded to both of you that he needed to tell a story, and you wrote it down.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's basically what happened. I mean, Pirandello said it in 6 characters in Search of an Altar. I mean, the actors just show up.
Oh, I love that play.
Yeah, the people actually show up and demand that the actors play them the way they're supposed to be played. Mm-hmm. And I think as writers, you realize that the only thing you have to worry about is that one of your best characters, who is not the protagonist, doesn't run away with the story. And so I think the hardest time we had was to keep Douglas in check, so he didn't become, you know, didn't become Cyrus Douglas.
Oh,
know?
He didn't, so that he didn't become Sherlock Holmes, and then
exactly,
you know,
the adventures of Cyrus Douglas, right?
Because there's so much about, you know, dealing with the colonialist aspect of the empire. Being a Sherlockian, do you have an issue perhaps with any of the kind of colonialist, the unfortunate colonialist aspects of the original stories that perhaps kind of needed redressing here?
Like cough, cough, the blanched soldier, which is terrible, cough, cough, tons of stuff that are not good.
You mean just like abuses that happened in the British Empire? Is that
sure.
What you're saying?
Well, just kind of colonialism that is not... Sherlock Holmes is always very strongly bohemian, and I think that's one of the reasons we all like him so much, because he just decides for himself. And he's not always right, but he is definitely always bohemian, and he's definitely always thinking for himself. But
the stories don't always take that tone. The stories often have all sorts of colonialist overtones in them.
For example... some of the people that shot Dr. Watson in Afghanistan, those are the same people that we're dealing with fighting against in Afghanistan now. That those tribal areas, it's the same place, the exact same place where Dr. Watson got shot. You know, so it has a lot of this has reflections of actual events within the British Empire. So it's really easy to follow those and use them because it helped form the backdrop for our story.
Hmm. I think that's very cool. You were paying attention to that. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have to get going. I have an 11:45 appointment.
You're
so
completely
Can I leave you in the very good hands of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar doesn't have to stay hanging out with us either. We just are very grateful for your time.
Yes, we very much
thank you so much. I mean, I really can't thank you enough. It was such a joy to read your review, and we are really happy about it. So,
we'll continue to promote the book as much as we can. We think it's wonderful, and you've done a wonderful job, and we're both big fans of yours anyway, for all the other things.
Exactly, yes.
Right.
So, anyway.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon, I hope.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
As soon as you write another book.
Bye. Okay. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2 to 1 be mine?